This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to Get Legally Speaking, the UK's number one legal consumer podcast, where we break down the law in plain and simple English to help you understand and navigate the laws of our land. I'm your host, Hattie Savari, and today I'm joined by leading family law barrister Maria Scotland from 5 St Andrews Hill Chambers in London. Maria specialises in divorce and high-value financial disputes, regularly acting in complex cases involving significant assets and non-disclosure. She has been recognised by the bar for her outstanding work. Now, here's the reality. Over 100,000 divorces happen every year in England and Wales. That's often quoted as one in two marriages ending in divorce. And yet, despite how common divorce is, most people have absolutely no idea what the process actually involves. Instead, many rely on myths, assumptions, or half-understood advice, which often lead to costly mistakes at what is already an incredibly emotional time. So, whether you're thinking about divorce, going through it right now, or simply want to understand your position, this episode is here to give you clarity, confidence, and real insight into how it works. Today, we're going to unpack what divorce really looks like, from how it starts, to what it can cost, to the biggest mistakes people make along the way that you will want to avoid. Maria, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Hattie. It's lovely to see you again.
Lovely indeed. Right, let's start right from the beginning. You know, I'm just going to go straight into it because it's one of these topics where most people start talking about divorce when someone says, I'm going through a divorce or I'm thinking of a divorce. And then the questions are asked. People start Googling, don't they? It's all the whole Google. Well, now it's Google and ChatGPT as well. Mm-hmm. And it's every AI thing you can find. But when someone reaches the point of saying, I want a divorce, it's often really emotional. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Even if you've been living separate lives for a while and you've been getting on with life in the home separately. But when it comes to that, I think it does really conjure up that whole, oh my God, I'm actually going to do it. But legally, the process itself is quite structured. And again, most people don't know that. Talk to us through what actually happens next or what should.
Yeah, good question. So when you get to the stage where you're thinking, I want a divorce, the important thing to know is that that requires, in order to get divorced and end your marriage, it requires an application to the court. So you're required to go to court. In England and Wales, there are family courts that deal with all things to do with a family, including breakdown of your relationship and divorce. Like you said, the legal process itself is quite structured, but things to be aware of. First thing is, in England and Wales, to end your marriage must have been one that is recognised as legal. So what does that mean? In England and Wales, there are some marriages, in particular religious marriages, that are not recognised as valid. And so because they're not recognised as valid, you can't end that marriage.
That's really important. It's a bit like the Islamic marriages, isn't it? Some of those.
Muslim marriage, Hindu nuptials. So unless your religious marriage was registered at a civil registry office, you won't be able to end it through the family court. So the first thing to do is make sure that your marriage is one that's recognised as valid in England and Wales. If you celebrated your marriage abroad, or it's a religious ceremony that was performed to as part of your nuptials, make sure that it's one that's valid. Second thing is make sure that the marriage must have endured for 1 year or longer. You can't end your marriage before 1 year in England, in
Do you know,
Wales.
I didn't know that. I
Yeah,
didn't
that's true.
actually know. So say you got fire shop marriage and then you think, oh God, really didn't want to do this. You have to wait 12 months.
You have to wait 12 months before you can apply to
Interesting.
end the marriage. And I have seen that actually. I've seen that in a number of marriages of people who've met through their families. They've
Arranged
been,
marriages sort of thing.
exactly, that
Yeah.
sort of thing. I've also had one marriage that ended on the night of the actual celebrations. My client decided, actually, this isn't for me, and remember, and then went to the woman that he'd formed a friendship with in his office. But anyway, you have to wait 12 months, so that's important. Then the process itself is actually quite simple. It can be done online. If you go to the government website, gov.uk/divorce, there you'll find a secure portal, which is actually a fancy name for an online website that deals with divorce. And it's quite simple and straightforward. You don't
Isn't it?
necessarily need a solicitor. You create.
It's so easy. I think it's gone up to £600 a rod. It was £594 to issue a divorce petition before, but now I think someone's mentioned the other day it's gone up to about 600. But the interesting thing is, you can have a joint application, which means
Do
no
it on
one's got
your
to
own,
blame
or you
anyone.
can
No
do
one
it
needs to
jointly.
point fingers. No one
Exactly.
needs to say she issued, he issued. The fact is, you say it's jointly. We both agreed this divorce needs to happen, or a single application, meaning only you apply for the
That's it.
divorce. But it's so, I was actually shocked when I first, for the very first time, saw that online divorce application. I thought, this is brilliant. It's brilliant because it's simple and it's not jargony and it's not asking you to fill out form after form after form. So that I think is great.
It is, because back in the old days, it was paper application times three, take it to the court office, find your court office, make an appointment at the desk, etc. etc. You, in the comfort of your own home, you can visit the website. If you find it overwhelming, you can use a solicitor, but it is for a user friendly. You create login details using your email address, and then you give it a password, and then you can create the application. You can press submit, or you can go back to it. Once you've submitted your application, you can go back in and you can track the progress. What you will need first, as I said, first check your marriage is valid. Second, you'll need to upload a copy of your marriage certificate. So you'll need to have that to hand and upload it. If you are applying by paper for whatever reason to the court, you'll need to send in the copy of your marriage certificate. You'll also need full details of your spouse. So some people, once they get to this stage, they've separated, they're living separately, you'll need the address and the contact details, so an email address and or a telephone number for your spouse. And then you'll also need, if you're applying online, debit card or credit card to pay the fee.
Okay.
And as you
Yeah,
said, it's
yeah,
around
yeah.
£600. If you're on low income, you can get help to pay, and you can be there's a separate form that, and they'll check your means test you, and it might be that you get help, or it might be that the entire application's free. Once you've made the application, there's a 20-week, what we call, reflection period. And base in plain English, that means the court will hold your application before processing it. That gives you time to reflect. It stops the late night, right, I'm getting divorced, going online, pressing submit,
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
wake up the next day and think, oh gosh, what did I do? It also allows time for you to reflect on your finances, your children, your housing arrangements, all those sorts of things before the actual divorce gets going.
No, people don't think about that often, do they? Because, and I think that's really important because I over the years, I have to say, I've only had two marriages which U-turned the divorce process that we were down the line doing, but they did happen, where they just changed their mind, they worked it out, brilliant, they didn't need to go through a divorce. But people don't necessarily think that once they fire off the divorce petition, is there any room to kind of just take a breather and change your mind? And I think that's really important because it doesn't need to be chaos, does it? I mean, the divorce in terms of we are no longer married, and this is what I know we'll touch this in later, but the finances are separate to this, but we are no longer married. Really easy form online. Make sure you do it on the government website, like Maria said, because there's lots of other websites that pop up that say, oh, we can do it for you. Don't do that. Go straight to the
As
government
we
website.
know, if you put something in Google, it's like with anything. What will cut the first things that come up will be those websites that
Sponsored
say, we can do this for
ads.
you, we'll take it'll cost you this much. Go and actually type in gov.uk, and if it becomes overwhelming, get help. But it is something that you can
It's
do
so easy. I've seen it. It honestly, it's harder to manage your TikTok account than it is to actually fill out a divorce petition. But I mean, there's still a real misconception that both parties have to agree to get a divorce, but that's not strictly how it works anymore, is it, Maria? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, no, it isn't. You can make, so as we've said, repeated, you can go to the government website, you can get a solicitor, you can make your application. It can be done what's called a sole application, which just means you, or else you receive a sole application from your spouse, or you can do it jointly. Now, there's really no difference in time, there's no impediments,
It's
but
that feeling of have
exactly.
they issued against me or have I issued against them? I think since, because obviously the change for that came in April 2022, and I think that changed everything because two massive things changed. People could jointly apply, and you didn't have to put the reasons for why your marriage wasn't working out and why you wanted a divorce anymore. And I think that really took off a lot of heat and pressure from people having to put down why they wanted a divorce. I really do. And the joint thing as well. Again, it's that whole kind of feeling that somebody's issued against you, or you're going to issue against them, and then they feel that, well, you've got the upper hand in this. I think it eliminates that whole who's got the upper hand feeling, which is brilliant. But in terms of, so you've issued your divorce petition, let's talk about when the other side, so say it wasn't a joint application, say you issued, they're not really wanting to get a divorce, but you do. Let's talk about what that person that has issued can do to progress the divorce.
Okay, so once you've gone through, there's the 20-week reflection period. After that, there are two stages, and they're called conditional order and final order. They used to be called decree nisi and decree absolute. And all you need to know is there's two stages to a divorce. So the first stage, after your 20 weeks, the person who applies either on their own or jointly applies for a conditional order. That means that you are, the court has considered your application, accepted your marriage is valid, accepted there are grounds, there's only one ground, that your marriage is broken down irretrievably, accepted you're entitled to a divorce, and you get your first stage of divorce. Then you have to wait a minimum of 6 weeks before you can apply for the final stage, which is the final order, and that legally ends your marriage. So the in there are two stages, and we usually use that gap, and we extend it past 6 weeks to sort out your finances and child
So
arrangements.
I'm talking about the acknowledgement of service. The other
So,
side has to file an acknowledgement of service to say, I've received this divorce application and I acknowledge and agree for it to proceed. What if the other person who has not participated in the joint application does not complete that and refuses to? I actually had a case like that recently.
Right. Yes, you're right. So, once you've applied online or in person or at the court, there's a form that the application is sent to your other spouse at the contact details you placed on your application, and then with, together with a form called an acknowledgement of service, which plain English means that they are required to send back to say, I've received this. There is a box that they can tick saying, I dispute the divorce, but there are only two grounds upon which they can now dispute a divorce. I say now, the process, a post, as you touched on, post the 6th of April 2022, is the process which you'll find online now. And we colloquially call that the no-default divorce. There's only two bases upon which you can contest a divorce nowadays. That is, you don't agree that the marriage or civil partnership was valid. So you're saying we didn't have a legally
We
valid
weren't
marriage,
married anyway. We didn't have a
or we
legally
weren't
binding
married,
marriage.
or
Right.
civilly
Okay. In
married.
which case, you can't divorce that. So I get
You
that.
can't divorce that. Or you're saying England isn't the proper jurisdiction, in other words, country, to deal with our divorce. And you are saying another country or another jurisdiction should deal with this. And that might be, there are so many people in this country who've got mixed marriages. You've got one person from another country, one person from England, or else you've got two
Or
people who are
it
from
could be,
outside
Maria.
of. country.
that because they were married in another country, for example, that proceedings have already been issued there and you can't issue proceedings in two jurisdictions. It could be something like that. Or they want the other side want to get the divorce carried out in another country for other reasons. It could be.
Exactly. So what happens in those circumstances? You say to the court, there is another country that is best to deal, or is the better country to deal with this. And then what the court will do in that circumstance, I mean, this is a long, it's a long explanation that's due. This is just a really short explanation for this
Yes,
podcast, the
yes.
oldest podcast. But what the court will do in that circumstances is list for a trial to decide which is the convenient forum. That's the way, the terminology, which again, plain English just means which country should deal with it. Should England deal with it? Should the
And
person that's
why?
applied for a divorce be allowed to proceed? Or is there another country which is better to deal with? So it might be, let's say, for instance, I've got a case at the moment where I've got parties, one, they're both from Ukraine. They both have relocated to London for obvious reasons. They relocated during the strife and the troubles there. They're living here. Wife has applied for a divorce in the family court in London, and the husband says, no, the best country to deal with it is Ukraine. And so there's an argument. So we are going to trial as to whether or not the wife should be allowed to proceed in England, or whether the court should dismiss her application for a divorce here on the basis that husband says, I'm going to apply in Ukraine. So those are the only two grounds you can apply. It's limited, and it takes away previously,
That's what I
prior
was
to
just about to say.
2022, yeah, prior to 2022 is a whole different world.
Yes,
When
it
the basic
was. It was. Because I had somebody issue a divorce in 2021 and their husband just would not acknowledge it and we couldn't progress it. And we had to make another D11 application to court without boring everybody with the wording of the court forms, in order to say to the court, look, the husband's just not responding to this. We want to progress this divorce. So I think it's fair to say then that since the 6th of April 2022, the changes, the two main changes that came to divorce law has made the process much easier now than what it was before. So if the other side, you've issued, the other side just isn't responding, isn't filling it out, to say, I acknowledge this divorce, etc. You can still progress the divorce regardless of that, unless they oppose it on one of those two grounds that you mentioned earlier. From what you see in practice, Maria, what would you say are the early and biggest mistakes that people make when emotions are high and that end up having, really long-term financial, legal, emotional consequences?
Well, the biggest mistakes I see are not in terms of the divorce application, but the other things which are ancillary to the divorce. The biggest mistakes I see is people either ignoring dealing with the finances. So, what people need to know that are listening is that to end your divorce, you follow the process that we've been describing, the application for a divorce. That does not deal with the finances. So, the assets that you own, the house, the cars, the money, the businesses, the income, your pensions,
I
all
need
of
to
those things,
highlight that. I need to get a big
all of those
highlighter
things.
right now and I just need to put red pen, yellow highlighter, bold. This is really important. This is probably one of the most important parts of this podcast. What you just said is that divorce is two parts. The divorce itself, as we've explained, going through the whole let's not be married anymore, is one part. Then you've got, and I'm going to refer to it as the financial divorce. And Maria mentioned the ancillary to the divorce because that is the correct legal term. And your actual divorce of not being married anymore, as Maria said, has not got anything to do with dealing with who gets what from the marriage, the assets, your assets and liabilities. And that's what I really need to highlight to people so they totally get that.
I think what people, the way in which to consider it is that when you get married, you are declaring to the universe, not only am I tied to you in marriage now, I'm your spouse, you're my spouse, but you are also creating a financial tie between you. You are declaring to the universe, all my worldly goods with you I share, unless you've entered a prenuptial agreement, or afterwards you enter a postnuptial
Post-nup,
agreement,
yeah.
you then create financial ties. So at the when your marriage has broken down irretrievably, you don't think you can live together anymore as spouses, you apply to the court to end your marriage if you so wish. You need to make a separate application to sever the financial ties between you and to place into an order the how your finances are going to be divided. And so all of the assets, everything you own anywhere in the world in your name, your sole name, or is held on trust for you, are considered your assets. Yours and your spouse's need to be divided, because otherwise, notionally, you continue to be entitled to each other's assets until death and
Again,
post-death
underline,
on
bolder.
inheritance. So the biggest mistakes I see is that people do a number of things. Either they don't deal with their finances at all, or they reach informal agreements between themselves, which they don't then get placed into a court order and the court endorses. So they think, okay, we've agreed this on paper, and then they go about their lives, but they don't have an order reflecting that agreement, because what happens without the order is you continue to be legally tied to each other. So let's say, for instance, this is the biggest mistake I see. I see clients who come back to me and say, we separated 8, 9, 10. I've had case where they separated 20 years ago. We got on with our lives. We had very little. I gave her the house. I kept the business, etc. I've gone on. I've remarried. I've now got an application for financial orders. What on earth is this? Because the other person hasn't got married, you continue to be entitled to bring an application after your marriage until you remarry. So if you don't remarry, you can make an application no matter the period that has passed. The court will look at the period that's passed and consider it, but you're both entitled to bring an application at any time after your marriage is ended
And
until.
I think that's probably right. I have certainly had a fair number of cases where literally people have said, but we agreed, and here's our emails or text messages. Some people have got stuff like that, that I gave her £100,000 or I gave him this. But the key here is, and I think that's absolutely right. I would totally agree with that, is that people don't deal with the finances of their marriage in agreeing on who's going to get what and getting it sealed by the court so that it's a legally binding agreement. Because if it's not legally binding, as Maria has just said, your spouse can come back to you, provided you both haven't remarried, and say, actually, I would like some more.
That money, it's gone. I don't, or I never
No,
agreed
and
it.
it's sad. I had a case
Yeah.
last year. The husband ended up giving another 1.25 million to the wife because there was no financial agreement sealed by the court. It wasn't legally binding. And we did 2 years in court, hundreds of thousands of pounds of fees later for both of them. And he ended up paying another 1.25 million.
Yeah.
And that hurt. And it's terrible. But
So
people often ask, how much does a divorce cost? I mean, I get asked this question all the
Oh,
time as well, but it's rarely that simple, isn't it? So,
it
what are the key factors would you say that actually drive the costs up or down of a divorce process?
one thing that's stuck in sand, and the only thing that is hard and fast in terms of the payments you'll make, is the cost of the actual application fee, which is £593. That's the standard fee. You can get help with that fee, or else if you're making an application and you're saying to the court, we just need you to rubber stamp our agreement. We've got a consent agreement. We need this endorsed. Then there's a lower fee for consent orders. But that's the only fee which is set in stone, because other fees, you can have no fees if you deal with your application without a solicitor. But if you've got solicitors and or barristers, the cost can vary enormously. It varies enormously depending on whom you go to. Do you go to somebody that's legally qualified, who will charge you a fee which is commensurate with their qualification and their years of qualification, and also their area? So are they in central London? Are they outside London? Central London, generally more expensive. Central cities, more expensive. Outside, less expensive. If you go to somebody who's not legally qualified, there are online websites saying, we will deal with your divorce very nicely. Those are, and then you're signposted to divorce coaches. They might charge a different rate. So it depends on whom you go to, if anyone to assist you. What also factors in is whether you enter that space to ask somebody to help you divide your finances with emotion. And that emotion is anger or unresolved issues, because that tends to drive the negotiations and the finances in a way which isn't constructive. Also, things that affect the finances and affect how quickly and how simply things are dealt with is whether one person is being honest, or whether they're hiding or failing to
And
disclose.
that's so common, isn't it? It's so,
Yeah.
because what I often hear is that people say, we've agreed everything and we're just going to tie up the bits and then we'll come to you and then your law firm and then you can do the consent order and then everything will be lovely. And then as they start drilling down the details of who's going to get what, generally conversations start falling apart. Because emotions are really high. At the end of the day, I've said this probably a million times and I'll say it again. You're one as you marry, as you said earlier, Maria, right? You're saying to the universe that we are now one unit financially and every other aspect as a married couple. When you get divorced, one half of one will never equals one. So everybody's always going to get less, and people just, either feel that they're giving their share away. They think, for example, I often see, maybe you do too, that the man, if he's worked full time and the wife hasn't worked full time because she's raised a family and she's committed her time to doing that in that way, he'll say, well, I've brought all the money in. Why am I giving half of the bank accounts and 70% or 60% of the value of the home and things like that? And I think the one thing I have to say that I see drive the cost of divorce up is people not understanding by in law what their entitlements are and what they actually should be dividing up. You get men that say, well, I don't care if there's two children under the age of 10 in the house. I want 50% of the equity in that. And we have got many other podcasts, particularly with Maria, that talk about how are finances divided? What is the formula? And I think the lack of knowledge on the formula is what drive people to go to court, to argue even more, and to want to really hold on to as much of their assets as they can. But similarly with time frame, again, people ask, and you probably hear it too, saying, how long is it going to take? But there's a legal time frame, isn't there, Maria, that we can't dictate, and that if going through the court process, it is set by the court. But what would you say tends to influence? Is there anything that does influence how long a divorce can actually take?
Yeah, it's what we were talking about there. It's the complexity of the case. So it's well, in terms of divorce, we're talking about finances. Now, the actual divorce time frame, you've got, as we said before, the reflection period. So 20 weeks set in stone from the date your application's received and processed. Then you've got a minimum of 6 weeks. You've got 26 weeks, and add to that some administration time, because very often you'll file your application and it'll be some time before the court acknowledges, processes it, and says, we've received it, we've looked at it, because of backlog. So you've got minimum of around about 26 weeks. So think 4 or 5 months. 5 or 6 months. And probably longer, a realistic time frame, 6 to 7 months to divorce, to deal with your finances. And if you're dealing with your finances in the middle, it really depends how far before you decided to end your marriage. Have you started the process about thinking of and discussing your finances? Things that affect your finances, as we've touched on, is emotion and the
Not knowing the
inability
process, yeah.
to think about dividing what was one into half. If you consider, as a, it's not a hard and fast rule, which is where, if anywhere you need some legal assistance, my clear advice and guidance would be get your legal assistance to deal with the finances rather than the
Early
divorce application.
and early.
If it's a really simple, even the most simple finances can be difficult because if you've got simple meaning low value assets, but you've got anything like children or special needs or you're older, it becomes much more difficult to divide them in half. And also people become emotionally wedded to what the little they've got. So you might need some help with that. Get some advice with your finances. What will drive the process to be longer is if you've got complicated assets, and by that I mean businesses, trusts, those sorts of things which need valuing and understanding how to divide. Because by reason of marriage, there is an entitlement to a share of all assets in the marriage. It becomes slightly more complicated. You've got what's called marital assets, those that belong to the marriage, were created in the marriage, brought into the marriage and then shared. And there's non-marital, which means entirely kept separate and is going to be taken from the marriage separately. Get some legal advice because that's where this gets complicated. And what can really stretch things and make them longer through the court process is difficult emotions, complex assets, and some factors such as inheritance or third parties having a share and ownership in your assets. Those sorts of things make it more complicated. Anything more complicated and longer means more money.
No, but that's
People
it.
pay lawyers.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. And I would add to that that getting early advice is so key and important. I heard of a case the other day where this person has paid in excess of £25,000 to lawyers over the last 6 months. No proceedings have been issued, so no court proceedings have been issued. It's literally for correspondence saying, "I'm not going to give you that, and I want this, and I don't want this." And then that circumstance, I have to say, I'm sitting there thinking, "What are the lawyers doing? What are they actually doing?" Because if you're not going to go, if mediation, and again, we've done episodes on mediation, which is where an independent third party tries to help you agree and mediate. If that's not going to work, if you're at loggerheads, why are you spending £25,000 plus on correspondence alone, just saying we're not going to actually agree this,
Well, this is where what's really important as part of the consideration of the finance is identifying someone who you feel uses the appropriate strategy, so you have a good relationship with, because it might be in that circumstance where you're just spending money on correspondence that one person is paying a lawyer to do exactly what they want, which is to be controlling, coercive, continue to be
We see it,
narcissistic,
don't we? We see it.
to wear down the other side. So one person might actually be paying their lawyer and be happy to have paid that 25,000, because though they're separated and their other spouse is divorcing them, they're continuing a war. And that's where, if you're not happy, the person that's continuing the war, and you think, well, what am I getting out of this? Then you need to
It's an
find a lawyer who's
issue.
going to say, I'm going to take this to court now
Yes.
for you, because outside of court, where we've tried to reach an agreement, we spent £25,000, and we need to reflect on how much of that 20,000 or £5,000 has actually achieved anything. And if not, then we need. So it really depends. Find the lawyer, find the person who's going to assist you, or find the tactic if you're dealing on your own that matches what you want, because
I think it's so key. So
both
it
parties
is
were happy to spend money.
so key,
It is, yeah.
particularly in these kinds of in any kind of litigation, because divorce becomes litigation when you're arguing about who's going to get what, in my view. You need to connect with the legal professional that's helping you. And you said one word there that for me is absolutely key and paramount in any legal case, and that is strategy. You need to have a strategy. You need to commercially look at what's going on. You can't sit there and say, we'll just throw money at correspondence, actually, without issuing at court to force the hand of disclosure, because we see that very often, that disclosure of assets and what's actually going on is being held back, normally from the man to the wife, where the wife has been kept in the dark about what actually is in the marriage and what are marital assets and what the husband owns and what bank bank accounts there are. We finalized the case last year where there was 184 properties and the wife didn't even know there was one. She had no idea that he even had one and 184. It was mind-blowing. So this is the thing. I know we're running out of time, but it's so key that strategy is applied and you're connected to the legal professional that is doing your work. You should be able to absolutely understand what they are saying to you. They should break it down in plain and simple English. You should be able to ask questions and get answers comfortably without feeling like you're made to feel silly. Because I've heard that before where people say, you just don't ask the legal professionals the questions because it makes me feel silly and I feel like I've been put in my place. And that should absolutely not be happening because at the end of the day,
No, a couple of things that are really key that people need to be aware of. Of course, it is. We were talking, and this started from talking about pre-court negotiations, and that is always a really good idea. But what people should, a couple of things that people should be really aware of. The court process is not like you see on television with wigs and gowns and lawyers talking to a witness or to the judge. The court process in family law dealing with finances is firstly it's private. In plain English, it means it's just between you and your spouse and lawyers if you've got them, or Mackenzie friends or anybody's assisting you if you've got them with permission of the court. Nobody else is invited. The public aren't invited. We wear simple dress. We don't wear wigs and gowns, and we speak plain English. And the court process itself is designed to assist you to mediate and reach an agreement if you can. So the court process empowers you to reach an agreement. And if you can't, the last stage, the last thing that happens is there's a trial and a judge steps in and makes an order. We use plain English. The court also, the whole process is governed by a term called overriding objective, which in plain English means the court will always look and see how much are you arguing over versus how much are you spending. The spend should never, ever reach a high percentage of what you're fighting over. We should always keep your costs down. And at every stage of a court process, a judge will demand to see from a lawyer, if you've got one, or anybody
The
that's
legal
charging you
teams,
money
what's been
from your
spent?
team, what you've spent. And the judge will scrutinize it to see that your what you've spent matches where we are in the process and the overriding objective. In other words, how much have you got? How much are you arguing over? If you're arguing over tens of millions and you've spent 100,000, that's sort of understandable. You've got a high-powered team, you've got complex assets. If you spent the same 100,000, you're arguing over 100,000, what is going on? And the judge looks straight at the lawyers for answers. So your lawyer fees should always be kept to the minimum. Equally, the court process should be kept as short as possible, and that's the job of the lawyer because emotionally and financially it's draining. So always look for a lawyer that matches what you want to achieve. We do find those people who love the court process because it continues domestic abuse, and that's in a whole nother podcast. But we do know that in marital dynamics there is abuse, and that can be continued through the court process. But again, don't be afraid of the court process because the judge will make sure he'll keep an eye on that to make sure it's not
And
being put
that's really
on.
important. I mean, a legal professional is there to help the situation. I
Very
cannot tell
difficult.
you the amount of time I have seen the other side in court, and I thought, what are they doing here? But they've turned around and said, well, that's the instructions we had. It shouldn't be like that. You need to really search. I sound like a therapist now. Search your gut when someone's talking to you, when your legal team are talking to you and explaining things to you, and you're trying to make decisions. It's really important that you understand the commerciality of your case, which is exactly what Maria was saying. You can't spend £100,000 to try and get yourself £100,000. I literally had the calculator out yesterday to my somebody I know, who I go to for a service, I won't disclose who, because she said, I'm going through a divorce. And I said, right. And she said, well, he wants this much, and I'm only prepared to give him this much. I said, well, the difference is 50,000. Now let's look at what a first and second hearing will cost you. We are going to be very close to that. So why don't you save yourself 2 to 3 years in the court process
Split
and
the
just
difference.
give him and just, yeah, just say, let's split the difference, or let me just give you a little bit more. And I think Really trying to really detach yourself to the emotional side of it, of why the divorce going on, how hurt you possibly are or the other person are, and why you deserve more or they deserve more, and look at what are the processes in this, what is a court likely, and this is the conversations I think that every legal team needs to have with their clients, Maria, as we do, what is the court likely to order? So then you start from there, and that should feed into strategy of what is the strategy of your case and why. But very quickly, we've literally got a couple of minutes. I mean, we've touched on this, but I just want to ask and get your view. We often hear the term amicable divorce. In your experience, is that genuinely achievable, or does it depend entirely on the individuals involved? I mean, I know my answer, but.
Yeah, there is. It's a willingness to compromise. It's open financial disclosure. It's being satisfied that even if you don't believe the other side's giving you financial disclosure, that you've got enough. It's good communication. It's support from whoever is representing you or assisting you. So it's cooperation, respectful, and taking advice. Keeping the costs down, that's always makes things amicable. At the end of a long, stressful court proceedings, can't ever say, oh, that's amicable. So that usually starts with starting off on the right foot, agreeing the marriage has ended, agreeing what finances you've got, agreeing to focus on your children's well-being, getting legal
Yes, that's
advice
a massive one.
early, and dealing with it as respectfully as possible, and not trying to get one over on the other side. There are ways of dealing with it. There are good amicable divorces, and the ones that I generally see are where people have taken early advice, and they've. I mean, if they come to me, my view is always, there's no point me being paid by you unless I can add more value to your case. But like I've said before, there are those people and individuals who don't want to be respectful and amicable. If you're respectful and amicable, you can't force the other side to be. So an amicable divorce takes two, or
Yes.
it takes a good legal team that says, come on, we've got somebody who's going to be difficult on the other side, so let's take this straight to court, and we will continue to be respectful and cooperate until they get to that stage. Or else
That's a really good point.
a judge will step in, make the order, and the judge will see that you've been throughout cooperative, respectful, and it might be that the other side gets penalised with a costs order if
I
you're.
think that's a really good point. Even if you have to issue court proceedings because you're just not getting anywhere in negotiations or trying to in mediation, going to court doesn't mean you need to get nasty. You can still continue to be really polite, really kind of sensible, in order to, what I always say, turn the temperature down. If the other side is aggressive and attacking and just. If you're then doing the same, then nothing's going to simmer down in order for people to start thinking clearly and patiently and calmly. And it is a process, and it takes time sometimes to get there, but I think you can get there. And I think that some cases, by the time they get to the end of the divorce, they're so exhausted, they're just glad it's over, and they forget what they were even fighting over. I mean, I've seen that too. But Maria Scotland, you are amazing. You are one of the most amazing family law barristers in the UK. I've said it, it's official. Thank you ever so much. That's all we've got time for.
Lovely to spend time with you, Hattie. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. We have over 6 seasons and 190 episodes to choose from. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com.